Welcome back to Cargumentative, where a room full of wannabe butt fighters join you to talk about cars, motoring, and all things automotive. I'm your host from the Sunday Times, Thomas Faulkner, and as usual, I'm joined by
Mark Buttfighter Paluta.
And the dub chest slapper.
The dub
chest beater.
Chest beater, yeah. Excuse me.
The dub Jared Harvey Ravine.
It's taking the studio by storm.
Yeah. Taking the world by storm.
Yeah. Hi, Tom.
How you guys doing?
Cool, man.
Awesome.
Good to be back.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
We've been on another vacation.
Yeah. Oh, we're missing Mike.
A vacation.
Oh.
It's so quiet and peaceful.
Yeah, just noticed he's not here.
We're not struggling with like shouting over each other.
It's true.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Not yet, at least.
It's coming.
It's that time of the show. News. The big news is, or was, Kyle Army Festival of Motoring.
Oh.
You went to that,
I did.
And?
Today.
Was it lovely? Today, yeah. Which was last week.
Yeah, which was last week. Yeah, probably 2 hours of my life I'll never get back.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Harsh, eh? Do you see why I don't want to go to these things?
So brutal, pal.
You know what? I found the big brands weren't there.
Yeah.
Well, so Audi and VW were probably the biggest brands. Merc was there. Did I say BMW? It was Audi, VW, Merc. I didn't see BMW.
Yeah.
But I think they have the M Fest that comes soon.
Well, they all look the same. It's quite hard to tell.
No, but you know what? There wasn't presence. There was no Porsche. There was no Lamborghini. There was no Bentley. There was no Ferrari.
So basically, if you like Volkswagens.
Yeah.
And Audi.
So, there were a couple of highlights for me. The VW ID hill climb car.
Yeah.
Or a replica thereof was there.
Okay.
Quite cool to see that.
Yeah.
Audi had a whole lot of cars with funny names.
Yeah.
Don't know what they were. 55s and 35s and...
No.
Very confusing.
45 cylinder cars. So, yeah, who knows. But they did have the electric SUV thing. What do they call it?
Something
e-tron. E-tron in left-hand drive. And then the main pit area where they normally have all the really big brands was full of Chinese cars.
Like Haval.
So Haval, I want to talk about. So taking the Mickey.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, look at this. Let's go and sit in this. What is this? So we sit in some Haval SUV. The salesman says, how's the China? This is GWM's like proper brand because GWM just do Buckies now. And look, I fiddled around with it. Mm-hmm. Wasn't bad, eh?
Really?
Yeah, $599 for a seven-seater. So the Chinese are that cheap, eh? And you see them on the road.
So maybe when your Pajero goes.
No, never. 5-year, 100,000K warranty, 5-year, 60,000K motor plan. If you're a parent and you want a 7-seater, it's not a bad thing.
I'm sorry.
I'm talking about this as it was the highlight.
Yeah. Whoa.
That shows you how bad the show was.
Just in case our listeners think that we're punting.
No, we're not.
At Haval. Please do not make any mistakes. We are not punting those things.
What I'm trying to emphasize is how bad the show was.
Okay. Oh, so out of
that
10,
was your highlight.
What would you give it out of 10?
I'd give it a solid 3.5.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Harsh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I wasn't expecting much, but I mean, I've been once. And it was last year, and also I wasn't blown away.
No,
it feels harsh, but I mean, we were there last year. There was action on the track. There was Porsche. There was Mercedes.
They had a couple of Toyota Supras on the track in different colors. A couple of Audis, but nothing fantastic. No, it was, I don't know. It just didn't feel great.
You didn't even like the crown jewel, which was the Golf GTI TCR.
I saw it there, but it just looks like a normal GTI.
Yeah.
People
making such a big deal out of it.
And it was kind of tucked away as well.
Like, really?
Yeah.
The thing about the TCR is that the reviews have come in and they're actually not that great.
Yeah.
It's not better than the Club Sport S.
They had
it's just a run out and they're all DSG.
But it's designed to be just below the Club Sport.
Oh,
is it?
Yeah.
So what's the price point, do you know?
VW were vague and they said under 700,000 Rand.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
So is the Club Sport no longer is not
on for sale?
I don't know. I don't want to say anything. And then
actually, there's some really terrible stuff on display by Race, which I suppose was worth the laugh. But like,
is that where the boots would go?
Like this Audi RS6 with canards everywhere.
That's amazing. Because the guys in Ingolstadt didn't do a good enough job.
No, they don't know what they're doing when it comes to downforce. So as long as you've got it stuck everywhere on the body,
it's got to do something.
You'll have more than enough. Yeah.
Eventually.
Okay, so no, it wasn't great.
I'm hoping that you know, it's to put together a festival, you know, a motoring related festival, it's a big deal. You know, it takes time, it takes money, yeah, it takes effort, and motoring isn't, you know, in a global sense, in a new sense, it's not a big deal for people. So I was kind of hoping the fact that people are making an effort to do something like this.
No, honestly, I believe only the VW group took it seriously. And and you know,
you promised I could use the term veritable onslaught.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think Audi had a veritable onslaught of new model launches.
But how can Toby not represent? I mean, it's his track. He should have had all his brands there.
No, it's true, actually.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think it is an odd decision.
But really?
But I mean, obviously, I think there's certain manufacturers who just don't see the value in car shows anymore, because you've obviously, I mean, like, you need to pay to be there.
Yeah.
And
who's attending them?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like, are you willing to shell out the money to be there if it's not necessarily giving you return?
Well, it wasn't very full, to be honest. And I mean, it was Thursday. I think today was the opening day.
The weekend's going
to
be.
It's going to be full.
It
people
was
just
full
go.
Last year.
Yeah. I think they're. Yeah, I think people want to get hot laps. I think that's the big attraction. Mm. That's the big stuff, yeah. But other than that, not great. What else is in the news, Tom?
Audi, Nadav's favorite Audi.
Oh.
Just got a Redux.
The RS6.
Yeah, the new event. Which is, I don't know, it's a lot more aggressive than they've been before.
Mm.
It's kind of cool, but I mean, it's lost the sleeper image that the RS6 has always had.
I don't like
had.
The back.
It's more
back,
verty.
Like silver piece around the exhaust and the...
Maybe they
call it the
maybe they've taken a leaf out of Racer's book. Like, you know what, these guys, you know.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Stick bits on.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't really look sleeperish. So yeah.
No.
So we're starting with 444 kilowatts as the base model, and there's still going to be a performance which already has been announced. I didn't see the figures for that.
No, I haven't seen figures for that.
Did they do that with the previous one, or was it the only one?
They had a performance. We never got it, but it came out towards the end of the time. But this is going to be available simultaneously. I think they're copying Mercedes AMG with the E63 and E63S.
Yeah,
okay. So, 444 kilowatts, 3.6 seconds to 100.
And fast. you can take the speed up. I think you can.
You can
max up to 310 or 305 or something.
I read the sort of press release, and geez, my eyes just got wider and wider and wider. The amount of tech,
it's huge.
The complexity of it's that huge. Car is daunting. I mean, just screens and rear wheel steer.
It's got rear wheel steer.
Yeah, and it's got suspension connected, like a McLaren suspension connected in the middle, so that each corner balances the other corner. And
a family station wagon.
And then it's got sports diff and dynamic steering and
too much.
All the and there's too much going on and imagine trying to calibrate all of that.
Imagine the rubber seals.
You spend the first 20,000 cars just finding a good seating position.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the most complex thing.
It does look good inside. It's got a nice new Q8, that new MMI Six black Q8, panel.
And the other thing that struck me is the one video I watched about it was the Car Fiction video, which we've spoken about before. Henry Catchpole presented that. And he's a long, tall drink of water, just like Thomas is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? He was dwarfed by that thing. It is massive. It's properly huge. I don't know. I'm not sure. I think the styling's a little bit over the top. I suspect, though, that it's going to be a lot more serious, a performance car, than the previous one. It sounds like they've
I mean, it was not already
in terms of, it was not in terms of outright speed. They've done a lot of work on agility and suspension, and I think it's going to be a...
Because it's going to be heavy.
Pretty,
it's going to be heavy.
But it's going to be
close on 2 tons, I'm sure.
A cool thing. I'm sure it's going to come here.
I don't know. I'm just kind of over new cars.
The old one had this perfect mix of like subtle meanness.
It was awesome.
Oh, what
it was
a great thing.
Car.
The new one
did everything well.
It did.
Everything.
We've discussed sleepers on the show before.
Yeah. We did discuss that.
I mean, our cars don't look fast, but that's the thing.
No.
That's a trick. Cool.
And that was what it was. It was an estate. Everyone's like, I don't want to drive a wagon.
Yeah.
It'll
kill a Lamborghini. So
absolutely.
Did you guys see, there's that new, well, I don't know how new they are, but Silicon Valley, they've got, there's this electric car company, Draco Motors. You heard of them? Anyway, they've come out with some super fast supercar electric.
Yeah. Faster than the Lotus.
19 million rand if you convert it.
Sorry?
19 million.
Nine zero.
One 9.
To buy the company or one car?
Just one car. It's got 895 kilowatts and a claimed 8,800 newton meters of combined wheel torque.
What?
Ridiculous.
Are they going to use it to tow a Boeing?
Like
what do you need
pallet?
That for?
It's like, if
it's like the Lotus has 2,000 horsepower.
If you drive that car around the equator fast enough, it'll slow the planet because it's got so much.
Just ridiculous.
Whoops, I swore there. Sorry.
No, we'll have to bleep that one out.
My bad.
No, I mean, I don't understand.
Electric hypercars, I don't understand. I just don't get it.
That's so much money. It's ridiculous. I don't understand. I mean,
they're expensive. You have to charge them. You can't drive far.
They're good for a couple of Ks. Yeah. It's ridiculous. They're heavy. Yeah. They aren't green. We figured this out already.
Yeah. I think in 20 years' time, they're going to look at these like this kind of spate of electric hypercars that were kind of like V1, you know, version 1s. They weren't quite thought out. The market wasn't sure what it wanted.
Betamax.
And people are, I don't think they're going to.
Or Laserdisc.
Laserdisc. So
that's what they are.
Or Minidisc.
Or Minidisc.
There's so much of that old tech that, you know,
just didn't work.
Isn't a drawer somewhere.
No.
I don't get it.
Do you know what makes that car seem cheap? Is that Bugatti.
Ooh.
The Centodici, am I saying it right?
Centodici.
Like Arrivederci.
Centodici.
Centodici, well, you know.
Centodici. No, 110. So that's it's an homage to the...
To the EB110.
Super Sport.
Yeah, it's pretty. Yes. It's actually very cool. They're only building 10. They're all sold.
I thought it was 30.
No.
Okay.
I think it's
my sources said 10.
Is it cool? Is it?
I don't know, it's kind of... It's
a little bit fugly. A little bit fugly from the back.
All Bugattis are a little bit fugly.
I think the Chiron is quite a good looking car. I think
I agree about the Chiron. It's very, very nice looking.
But how, I mean,
it's cool that they make it.
It's really so expensive.
Cool. So it's what? It's
$8.9 million.
Actually, W16.
I'm very glad you brought
four
the
turbos.
I forgot about that news article this week. I'm glad you brought it up. There was something I wanted to say about it. I think Bugatti have been very clever this time around. They learned some pretty difficult lessons from the Veyron, and I think what someone came up with the Veyron is that they kept making new special editions.
Yeah.
I think was it 400 that they were going to make, and that number was announced initially.
Oh yeah.
And
they basically kept changing the paint.
They couldn't move them. Yeah, couldn't move them. They wouldn't sell. They sold the first few very easily, and then I think, you know, the novelty wore off and it was difficult to move the rest.
Expensive,
And so what they did was that they created these bespoke looking special editions, but they could only go so far. So there was some paint and some wheels and some this and some that, but you know, in the end, the majority of the car was pretty much the same as the base Veyron.
Exactly.
So I think they learned a very special lesson there, and I think they've been very clever, because what they've done is they've effectively done what VW does best, which is to make that Chiron technical package modular.
Oh yeah.
And what they do is they keep dressing the same technical package in different clothes, and it's a much deeper kind of change. It's actual bodywork rather than just paint, and that appeals to rich people. Rich people like one of one
exclusivity
stuff.
Because
that's really exclusive. It's not just a Chiron with a new paint job. This is a completely new car, which it's not.
It's different.
It's very appealing.
It is.
And it's much easier to sell. I think it's very, very clever.
I like the idea.
Very, very clever.
And I'm glad they do it. I'm glad they make interesting stuff. And it also revived a lot of interest in the EB110.
Which I've always loved that thing. I thought it was a forgotten supercar.
Yeah, but that car like completely missed social media. It was way before.
Just before. Yeah,
way before. But it's a really special thing. So is it a V12?
Yeah.
Four turbo V12.
Mm-hmm.
Really special thing. Really quick, Michael Schumacher made it famous by, I think he had a yellow one.
Yellow, he bought an SS, that's right.
I saw a blue one getting crashed live on TV. I was in Moscow for this Formula One street parade, and before the Formula One cars came out onto the circuit, they had all these rich playboys in their supercars, and this like lost it in his EB110, smashed into the wall.
Oh no.
It was chaos.
That was a special thing. That's who owned Bugatti in that period? I think that was Bugatti.
They were independent, so that it's a very interesting story. If the listeners are interested to go have a look at, is it Romano Artioli who bought the name Bugatti from the Italian government or something, and revived the company after 30 years or something. The company was completely dead. designed this EB110 from scratch and revived the name, and then effectively that all went under again. They sold a few cars. It's
probably selling them at losses and that kind of thing.
But it was a properly engineered...
It's a cool car, huh?
It's really a cool car. Unfortunately, that's it for news.
Oh, no.
We've reached our limit.
Enjoying the news.
Okay. Yeah, me too. Yeah. Could have gone on some forever. News. But Paige is hustling us along.
Paige is like swearing and spitting and weird stuff happening behind the glass.
So scared of her.
Anyway, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back soon.
Guns, an essential tool in self-protection or a catalyst for criminality. CliffCentral.com presents GunCast, a podcast that unpacks the divisive issue of gun ownership in South Africa. Join legal expert Martin Hood as he hosts a series of talks with both sides of the gun lobby. Whether you support the right to carry guns or you believe they're a destructive tool that society could do without, GunCast will enlighten and challenge you in equal measure. Find GunCast now on the Cliff Central app, on CliffCentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Mark?
Yeah?
You did something, was it last week, that I've always wanted to do and probably will never do.
Yeah, actually not... I didn't think it was so much of a big deal. I drove a car to Plett and back.
Yeah, but it wasn't just any car. It was Mark's...
My 1984 Porsche 3.2 Carrera.
Yeah.
And Grand Prix white.
An air-cooled road trip. That's something I always wanted to do.
I think it was the perfect time of year. Because it wasn't too cold, wasn't too hot. I drove through the Karoo sunset-ish.
Mm.
Actually, it's turned my heat on.
Really?
Yeah.
What time did you leave?
I left at about 11 a.m.
Okay.
Yeah. And, yeah, it was just... I suppose I did it on a whim. I felt like I needed to drive something interesting.
Yeah.
As far as I could.
Have you driven this car long distance before?
Not this particular one, but I've driven others that I had like it, as far as Durban.
Okay.
So not that far. I always underestimate how far Plett is.
It's far.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Graaff-Reinet, I think, is where most people stop, and that's about 750 k's from Joburg. So it's pretty far.
So what is it like? I mean,
so
what is an 80s Porsche like on a long road trip? Because I'll never know.
So it's not lacking in performance. Yeah. That's for sure. It's hell of a noisy.
Is it?
Wind noise. Yeah. Oh my word.
Really?
Yeah.
From where? Like mirrors, seals?
From the rain gutters. The rain gutters that modern cars don't have on top of the windows. From there, and I've also got a sunroof.
Okay.
With probably a bit of a leaky seal. Yeah. So, yeah, pretty noisy. But, yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, I tell Nadav that it was perfect, but he'll argue that it wasn't.
Well,
so
that's it, because, I mean...
The truth is that at my first gas station stop,
yeah,
it hesitated to start. The starter motor didn't want to crank. Clicked the key a few times and eventually it went. Turned out that the rest of the trip I couldn't start the car. So it's interesting though. You've got to stop on a hill. You've got to find a hill. That's like finding places to park is amazing. So anyway, yeah, it ran really well other than a sticky starter motor.
Was that the only problem? Because like a lot of times people are like, you should never take an old car on a long trip. What if? And then your mind starts playing all these kind of games on you and like...
So the starter motor wasn't the actual problem.
Yeah.
The actual problem was a CV joint boot that's split.
Okay.
And that sits underneath the starter motor.
Yeah.
And that threw grease all over the starter motor and caused it not to work. Turned out to be not so much of a serious problem. Those things can run dry for a couple of thousand Ks, so it wasn't a big deal. But that didn't dampen the trip. The trip was... epic. So it took 2 days to go down, 2 days to come back. I did the George Pass.
Oh, nice.
So I did it. My cousin actually met me at the top of the George Pass. He's got an Aston Martin Vantage like mine, so we swapped cars on the way down.
Yeah.
And on the way back, I did the same George Pass 3 times.
Serious?
It was that good.
Just up and down.
Up and down three times. It was incredible.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and while I was down there, Neisner's got quite a legendary car scene.
Yeah.
They're big on restoration. Lots of artisans down there. So I stopped I can't remember the name of the place. Do you know
Sedgefield?
No, Sedgefield Classic Cars. I stopped there.
Okay.
amazing selection of stuff, like nowhere in Joburg.
Really?
Yeah. Really good stuff. And then there's the guy that was going to do the, you wanted a car cover from
Budge.
Budge.
The owner Budge Engineering, I've always enjoyed that.
The boarding school.
The name of the man who owns it is Ron, and he specializes in Jaguar restoration. He had about 4 E-Type Jags in various stages of restoration. So nice to see. And then across the road from him is
Frost Brothers,
who were closed, unfortunately. And next to them is the storage space of a man named Brian Bruce. And he showed me around his collection, which is phenomenal. I mean, yeah, another level. He's like the Johann Rupert of Meisner. He's got some proper cars. So that was lovely, yeah.
And tell me something. I was going to ask you back to the Porsche.
Fuel consumption was crazy.
What was the fuel consumption?
It was crazy.
Did you actually sit down and work it out?
Yeah, the trip was expensive.
Really, huh?
Yeah, it cost me a fortune.
You work out liters per 100 k's,
did you?
Yeah, I think it probably worked out to about 12. So for open road driving, it's crap.
But were you pushing it? I mean,
this is a public domain. I can't really discuss that. But
well, there's no proof.
You
could be lying.
On the odd occasion, got over 120.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it goes. But it's fast enough.
But I mean, I suppose if you kept it to like 130, 120, 130.
Yeah, but I didn't. Yeah. I think if I kept it between 120 and 130, I would have been fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, I actually haven't done the maths exactly, but I think it was probably closer to 15. But it was.
How many revs at 120?
3,000.
No. It's higher than that. No.
Really?
3.5, yeah.
On the no.
Yeah.
At 120?
Yeah.
No.
Can't be.
Should be.
Sorry, that's 160.
On my SU, it's 120 or 3,000.
So I actually stuck the rev counter on about, straight up is about 3.5, between 3 and 4. And there I'm doing about 140. You're right.
Okay.
No, so the whole thing is, don't be afraid to drive these things. I mean, they're very simple.
Yeah.
And especially in old Porsche, they are built to do thousands and thousands and thousands of trouble-free miles.
Yeah.
They just go and go and go for it.
And they're built to do it on the autobahn, and they're built to do it
at high speed. And comfortable. So, I mean, I've done many trips in many different cars. This is one that I got out of, and I didn't feel any back pain or anything. It's really comfortable. I've got Bluetooth in it, which is nice. Aircon doesn't work, but you didn't need that this time of year.
They never really work.
Yeah.
Even when you...
But such a cool car to do it in. Really cool, really fun. It's nippy, it's tiny. So, yeah, it's fun.
I was going to ask you something else about it. Oh, yeah. Down at the coast. Did you feel like a big improvement?
Definitely. Over like 3,500, 4,000 RPM.
Yeah. It's smoother?
It's quicker? Much quicker. At higher revs.
Yeah.
So it's quite peaky.
Yeah.
You feel a definite like camminess about it, which is really cool.
We should do it next time you go to
Why
the beach.
Why don't
house?
These guys do it?
Because you guys have put in my head.
Fixed your car, man. Your car's got the newest motor out of all of us. Nadav doesn't even have a magnesium block.
I even put in a brand new CDI, like a classic. Well, you see, you've got CDI.
Oh, the thing is, you've deviated from standard Porsche.
It's better than standard.
It's doomed.
It's better. It's not from the '80s. It's giving you the '80s driving feel. Okay, but with modern technology.
I really think we should do it. Nothing really stops me. I'll be happy to drive my car to.
We could do an all air cooled drive. Yeah. Wow. We don't have to go all the way down to Plet. We could go to Durban.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Get Mark involved if he would ever drive anything besides his Lambo with the doors open. It would be nice.
With a photo crew around him, taking photographs every 5Ks.
Paparazzi around him.
Yeah.
Because it's just selfies and Lambo doors.
Imagine, we can have like
tequila. And tequila.
We can have a stop motion animation film of Mike driving all the way down, doors opening, closing, shirt, sunglasses, shirt off, tequila bottle, PR girl.
If you look up Mark Salomon, it's got a picture of a Lambo door and a bottle of tequila.
It's incredible.
Cash, tell us about what you did.
Yeah, you've also been driving.
Funny you should mention that.
Great segue.
Textbook
stuff.
I finally drove Mark's Diablo. So maybe I've got a little bit of cool still radiating off me.
I can't believe you haven't driven this thing. I mean, you've known Mike for what?
I mean, he
years.
Pretty much lends that thing out. Everyone's driven it. You know? But has everyone driven it with a working suspension?
No.
Because it's only recently got its active suspension sorted.
Does it actually make a difference?
No.
Seems to.
Really? What did you think?
I've the only other Lambo I've ever driven is a modern Huracan. Mm. And just modern supercars are so competent. You know, they've got no foibles, really. You know, it's all sort of
niggly bits. Like the Audi switchgear.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with it. There's really nothing wrong with it. It's an incredible experience. The ergonomics are on. The engine's amazing. The gearbox is brilliant. You know, so there wasn't much to report on the Huracan. It's great. But so Diablo is really kind of what I grew up understanding Lamborghini to be, you know, an Italian
crazy
out there avant-garde, trying to be different, trying to be intimidating.
It's got that element of danger to it.
It's called the devil.
Yeah. It's called the devil, for God's sake.
It's named after the dark Lord.
So certain things surprised me pleasantly, and you know, it's, I suppose it's always the same. The things that surprised me pleasantly were actually once you're going, it's not so difficult to drive.
Well, that's what I asked for. Yeah, the first time I drove that car, I was expecting hell on earth.
Yeah.
And it's actually comfortable.
No,
the steering is nice and light. Yeah. And, you know, it starts up first time normally, and it's easy to maneuver and see out of.
Maneuver?
Yeah. Well, you know.
I don't know about easy to maneuver.
Not if you're reversing.
The visibility was difficult. And it's someone else's car, and it's not really replaceable, and so that's intimidating in itself. But the steering, I thought, it was very positive, quite light. Gear change was nice and positive, quite light. The clutch wasn't particularly heavy, given what it's connected to.
Yeah.
I found the accelerator oddly sticky. Mike seems to think that's normal. I thought it was very difficult, very hard to push it and modulate it. I thought that was quite odd. Never felt anything like that before. And it was really comfortable.
Yeah, it
once
is comfortable.
You're in, you sort of slightly reclined.
Yeah, it is comfortable.
And so I think in my head I've always seen it as I've always equated supercar with sports car.
Mm.
And I think there's some supercars that are more GTs than sports cars. And
I think
this is a long distance weapon.
Yeah,
it really, really is. It's torquey. It's got legs.
Huge legs.
You know,
it's incredible.
You get it on the highway, you're doing like, I don't know, zero RPM at like 120. You realize that there's still 200 kilometers to go per hour in this thing.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. It's an experience. I mean, it's intimidating and sort of surprising at the same time. It's definitely fast. Not like I pushed it terribly. But what did sort of... you don't want to throw it around. It doesn't encourage you to throw it around. It's certainly not a sports, it's like a sporting sort of scalpel of a track car. It's nothing like that.
I mean, I found it's one of those cars that gives you like almost no sense of what it's doing. But like the feel there, minimal.
Mm.
You don't actually know how much.
That's why
grip
it's nice on the open road.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how much.
The brake restraint is good.
That might have had to do with the suspension. That wasn't, you know, locked down in at the speed. It's speed related. It's if you put it on auto, it adjusts itself in terms of firmness and height. So I think that would have a lot to do with feel and. But it's. I guess.
And the brakes.
Look, I didn't. I mean, I never.
I went around the track with him the weekend before that.
Mm.
I mean, he's obviously done a lot of miles in the thing, so he drives it really well. But it was competent around the track.
Mm.
Much more so than I thought it would be.
Hmm.
But I suppose that confidence comes with just knowing
with time. Yeah. I mean, at no point did I feel confident to throw that thing around.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I ever would. It's super intimidating from that point of view. But lovely tractable engine.
Yeah,
something Italian about the sound.
It sounds so good.
Italianness, I know what you're talking about. It's not perfect. It's really throaty and raw.
Yeah. I mean, weirdly enough, it actually reminded me of a four-cylinder Alfa in some way. There's some sort of kind of tone in there that kind of sparked the memory. But I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but it was a really cool thing, a very cool experience. Cool. I'm glad to have had it, and thanks to Mark.
I think there's so much more that those classic cars, my Porsche and that Lambo and whatever, have to offer than the modern equivalent.
Big time. I mean,
so much more going on.
You're never going to go as fast. You're never going to be as comfortable. But you just get that cool factor and that visceral feedback.
Mm. Yeah,
like that sense of occasion where every time it's kind of like special.
So I jumped out of my Porsche
Straight
after doing
8 hours in the thing into my C-Class diesel, and I got it up to exactly the same speed I'd been sitting at for 8 hours. And I didn't even know I was driving. You know what I mean? Like the Porsche is a lot going on.
Yeah.
And the Merc is just like a couch.
Yeah.
And it's so boring.
Well, like in the Porsche you're driving, in the Merc you're traveling without moving.
Exactly.
So, yeah. You know, that's
that's well said. That's well said.
Oh, thanks. Well, that was a little bit of a Jamiroquai.
That man knows about cars.
He does. He's got a Diablo like that. Well, he had one.
It's true.
Similar.
But that's it. I mean, Lamborghini Diablo, I mean, in my opinion, the last great, like, old school Lambo. And everybody, if you can, and you have the means, try get out there and drive one.
Start phone Mike. He'll just bring anyone for a drive.
Hit up Mike on Instagram, and you'll probably, you know, be able to get a drive.
Yeah. He's very generous like that. He always is, jokes aside. So yeah. Thanks, Mike.
Guys, quick break, and we'll be back shortly.
Young people are making their mark. Get up!
Tune into the Sebenza Live Behind the Hustle podcast every Tuesday to find out more about what fascinating careers are out there. You can find us on the Sowetan Live website,
or you can follow us on Twitter on Sebenza Live.
Sebenza boy.
Sebenza girl.
Sebenza.
Yavamdana.
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Guys, in this segment, we thought that we could answer questions that a reader... I think this actually comes from a reader, Hanada.
A reader. I think it's a listener.
A reader. That's right. Sorry.
Because we're a podcast.
10 years in print.
Unless it's like dictation.
This is a good
page.
Friend of mine.
10 years in print.
Good friend of mine, Brad.
Yeah.
He sent a question.
Brad wants to know...
Is this Fit Mom Vera?
No.
Oh, that's not Fit Mom Vera.
WTF
is a different friend of mine. Yeah. And Brad wants to know what we use these terms all the time.
Mm.
Coupe, 2+2, spider,
shooting
convertible.
Brake.
He wants to know what do all these things mean.
So let's talk about
it. Well, let's do it. So let's
start with the first one. Coupe.
No. Let's start off with spider, because that's the first on the list. Because if we don't stick to the list, we're going to go all over the place. It's going to be higgledy-piggledy.
So spider can be known as many things. Spider, a convertible, Volante, if it's an Aston Martin.
Yeah. Cabriolet.
So it means convertible.
But isn't a spider a sporty convertible? The dove is nodding. So
I think the problem with these terms is that there's no real definition in the end.
Mm.
And they're often derived, whatever they are, they're often derived from horse carriages. So
correct.
A lot of these things came forward from horse carriages and started being used by the motoring industry.
Because carts were replaced with cars.
And so there was similar concepts. And the problem is that they're kind of used loosely and sometimes interchangeably, and certain manufacturers prefer a certain thing, and just because spider means something to one manufacturer doesn't necessarily mean, so there's no rules. That's a problem that makes it difficult. But generally I would say that a spider is a sporty convertible. I would say that it's two doors.
Some manufacturers do spider with a Y and some with an I.
That's right.
Mm.
Depends who they are.
But that don't Italians do?
I think there's one Italian that does it with Y. I think a Lamborghini might do spider with a Y.
I think they might.
And Ferrari and Alfa do an
I. With an I,
yeah.
And the Germans, I think, do a Y.
Sometimes.
Like the Porsche Spider.
It's a Porsche.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Aston do the Volante, like I said.
Yeah.
And then, Cabriolet and convertible.
Well, I mean, those are separate things. So we're basically going to just...
I didn't know that. So they're different.
We're going to recap.
Is a convertible different to a Spider? No.
It's the same. Cabriolet. Well,
no, they're the same thing.
So, look.
Okay, so let's just say those are all removable roofs.
So we're going to say the argumentative definition of a spider is that it is a sporty convertible.
Yeah.
Usually a two-door.
Yeah, okay, let's say that.
Okay.
But now, you've described something as a spider using... That is a spider type of body shell. But some manufacturers use it as a model title.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Like it was not necessarily the spider.
So MRT spider or the alpha spider.
Yeah.
Which wasn't originally a spider. That's what it was called spider later.
It's called a Julia spider.
Spider.
That's its full name.
Yeah.
Well, that's thinking about the Duetto shape.
Yeah.
That's a Julia spider. Julia spider.
Well, that's the thing with these terms is that manufacturers will often use them for marketing purposes.
Yeah.
And that's where lines get blurred because it's
not. I know a spider is an 8-legged thing.
Exactly. So don't get bogged down, guys. Yeah. Don't let it stress you out, Brad.
Let's move on to the next one.
Cabriolet.
And a convertible the same.
So the roof comes off.
Yeah.
So we're not going to say soft top because some are hard tops.
Yes.
Yeah. So convertible.
And some, like the Mercedes Pagoda,
has
a hard top that's removable and no soft top. So it's a hard top that you just take off.
Mm.
Pagoda, California, sorry.
California.
Let me be specific. Yeah.
Jeez.
So from that, you can kind of segue into a Targa.
What about...
Oh.
Yeah, you can. And what about the Ferrari, the one with the flip open top? What is that called?
That was a Super America.
Super America. Yeah. So don't call it a spider
so
or
what
a
is
convertible.
That? Is that convertible or is it a Targa? Because it had like...
this.
It had buttresses on either side. Yeah, so a Targa is a small segment of roof. That's removable.
Yeah. And leaves glass behind.
But leaves some glass behind.
Yeah. Because in America, back in the day, when was it, 60s?
With Trans Ams or whatever.
No, they were like, I think...
T-tops.
Convertibles were banned. Am I right?
Legally,
you weren't allowed
to
have...
You needed a rollover bar.
A rollover bar. So then the Targa came, and that's quite clever, because it's basically...
I think that's why Porsche did it.
Yeah.
Is to get into America with a convertible.
Correct.
And they keep the rollover piece, so they keep the structural rigidity and the safety. Not structural rigidity, actually.
Well, up to a point.
Because it still bends like a banana.
But it's better than it's better than not having it.
It's not.
It's a compromise.
We can get into that.
It's a compromise.
Yeah, it's a compromise. But it's for safety, actually, in case of rolling over.
Yeah.
So taking care of the open-topped...
I think so.
That's open top.
Yeah. Cabriolets are kind of like the softer.
We've done that.
I'm just saying they're kind of the softer.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I think these are interchangeable terms. A cabriolet, in other words, a spider is a cabriolet, but
correct.
A cabriolet is not necessarily a spider.
Yeah.
So
making them.
So Ferrari 458 spider.
Yeah.
Has a hard top that folds away.
Yeah.
This is a cabriolet.
So is that a cabriolet or a convertible?
It converts from a hard top into a soft top.
So in other words, there's lots of different words for cars whose roofs come off. Whether those roofs are soft or hard, whether they four doors, two doors, four seats, two seats, whatever.
Can we say our marketing companies have lots
they
of
have
fun with
different
them?
Names?
Yeah. Well, we can. Yeah, we can. And with
so
the
now
next
what's
one,
a, yes,
coupes.
Ooh.
So a coupe, in the traditional sense, is a two-door sports car.
Yeah, that's it.
Hard top.
Exactly, hard top. Coupe in America, coupe everywhere else.
Yeah.
Two doors. But the marketers came along and decided to have things like a four-door coupe.
Oh, BMW.
BMW. Thanks, BMW, for ruining that.
So they got the four series four-door?
The Grand Coupe.
Grand Coupe, oh dear. That's a mess. Okay, so let's ignore that. Let's pretend that doesn't exist.
It just doesn't work.
To the rest of the world, it's a two-door
hot top. So what they have in common is that sloping rear roofline. And that's what sort of... So that seems to be what's in common.
It's a silhouette.
Isn't coupe a French word?
Yeah, and it also came from horse carriages in some way. I can't remember exactly what it was. But now that you have... In other words, all coupes... Whether they're two doors like they were supposed to be with hardtop, or now they have a four-door coupe, and the latest is, of course, having a four-door coupe SUV, like an X6 or a Cayenne coupe.
Oh, terrible.
But they all have in common the rear sloping roofline.
So that's what it is.
So I think that's what it is. A coupe
so almost
is
like a hatchbacky kind of. More
sloping.
So.
Yeah,
sloping.
So it's less practical. So if you get into an X6, which is a four-door coupe.
If you're sitting in the back and your head hits the roof, it's probably a coupe.
Yeah. So you've basically ruined the SUV by trying to make it a coupe.
Exactly, because the SUV would be straight up at the back.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay, so what's the next one?
So coupe is fairly easy to understand.
Sedan.
2+2.
Yeah, okay, that maybe takes a little bit of explaining. So 2+2 is referring to the amount of people that can fit in the vehicle.
So
2+2 is equal to 4. So why is it specifically 2+2?
Because they're not really
exactly
not really a four seater.
It's not a full time four seater.
So like
it's a two adults plus two children.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Or two very small skinny models.
Or two, four two, adults for a very short period of time.
Thinking. Two skinny models. Yeah,
exactly. So basically, I mean, and a lot of coupes, I guess, could be two
there
plus
are
twos.
Often two plus twos. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Not always. Yeah. But often.
So can you have a coupe two plus two? You can.
Yeah.
Coupes are often two plus two.
Oh, okay.
But they're not always two plus two.
So actually, a 911 is a coupe two plus two.
It's a two plus two coupe. Yeah, absolutely.
And so is a Ferrari GT4 Bertoni, the Dino.
Correct.
Yeah.
So is a Lotus Evora. Does Evora have two?
Yeah, it does.
There you go. Yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
So all right. So that's
something
two
like
plus two.
Something like an Aston Martin Vantage has got two seats and that's it.
Mm.
A Boxster has got two seats and that's it. There's nothing behind you.
Yeah.
Whether you know the Vantage is front engined, rear wheel drive, so the engine's in front and there's a boot space behind. The Boxster's mid engine, so behind you immediately sits the engine.
Mm.
But there's nothing behind you. There's no other seats.
Yeah, a Vanquish sedan, has the seats at the back.
A sedan would have four full sized seats that can be occupied at all times.
And a four doors. Two, a sedan has four
and
doors.
Four doors. A two plus two would often be, in the case of a coupe, would have only two doors, and the rear seats would be for like temporary use or for very small people.
Like a Renault Laguna.
Like a Renault Laguna?
Remember the
Laguna Coupe.
Oh,
yeah.
I know the car you're talking about. I think they sold three.
Yeah, they did.
Okay, what else is
so
there?
Is that two plus two?
That's two
so
plus
that's
two.
Fairly good.
Yeah, that's pretty.
So it's four people, but two of them in the front, two of them in the back.
Two in the back are squash.
It's not a full-time four-seater.
Not a full-time.
Okay, cool. Next.
Right. After that, we are going into GT. So GT
stands for Gran Turismo.
But again, completely overused, misused.
Mm. Yeah. So it implies that the car is good on the open road.
Yeah, it was built for touring.
Long distance touring.
Long legs.
So because it's as opposed to a sports car.
Yeah.
So a sports car is good around corners.
Exactly.
Short distances. Short distances. You don't want to drive it for long.
So kind of like your 911. You don't want to go far because of a brake.
Your brake, yeah.
So it's a sports
SC,
car.
As we said, was basically German for short range.
Shorter. And then a GT car is normally very luxurious and comfortable and powerful.
Like so, but a GT car in the real sense that I understand it, wouldn't be a sedan. So
no.
A sedan is not a GT car.
Mm-mm.
So that means a GT car has to be.
So
a
let's give examples of
coupe.
Good GT cars. Maserati Gran Turismo.
Gran Turismo.
Correct. So Jaguar. Which one was it?
XKR.
XKR. That's it.
Yeah.
Something like an Aston Martin
DB9.
DB11.
Mercedes S-Class, SL?
Coupe.
SL.
Yeah. SL is a GT.
It's a convertible GT.
What about things like a Porsche Panamera? Because that's an excellent Grand Touring.
It's a four-door.
I know, but it's a four-door.
It's so good at Grand Touring, but I don't think it would strictly be called
so
a GT.
So is an S-Class good at Grand Touring, but it's not.
It's not a GT.
What about the S-Class Coupe?
So you know what to me?
Yeah, that would.
There you go. That works.
You know what to me define when you say GT to me? What defines it is two cars.
What?
One is the Ferrari Daytona.
Yeah.
And the second one is the Citroen SM. Oh. These are two cars.
Yeah.
I can imagine climbing into the soft leather and driving across Europe.
Yeah.
Doing it in an afternoon, Paris to Monte Carlo.
With the dogs on the car.
With the dogs on the car.
You can't have the dogs
Napoleon.
In a GT.
Yeah.
You
can, but they might have a 2 plus 2.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So, that's a kind of...
BMW 6 Series is a good GT.
Yeah, it's a good GT. Yeah. Well, so it seems like a GT needs to be a coupe.
Correct. It should be a two-door.
And it's probably a two-door. Yeah.
That's what I would say.
Yeah.
So these terms...
But less sports car, so probably a bigger car.
Yeah.
Bigger car.
Yeah. Built for comfort and
often
speed.
Often 2 plus 2.
Mark's favorite Porsche 928.
Yeah, that's
the ultimate GT car.
GT, yeah.
Great GT car.
So they've got to have good cruise control as well.
Yeah.
Well, cruise control.
Or you've got to have a good foot. So if you hung over the next day and you're at the show...
One of my cars that we thought would be a good GT just isn't. And
which
that's
is
my V-Advantage.
Advantage. Terrible.
Really?
It's a good sports car.
It's a proper sports car.
But you're uncomfortable afterwards and you can't modulate the throttle properly and it doesn't have cruise control and
so could you
shouting at you all the time.
The 911 could be a GT car.
It is a good GT car.
That's what's
I've
interesting.
I've just proven that.
So the thing about a 911...
It takes many
is
boxes.
It's very, very few cars that do as much as a 9 because
although
you can argue it's a sports car and you can argue it's a GT
car and a 2 plus 2
yeah, you see,
and
but
a
coupe
and
but
a cabriolet and a target
yeah you see so they take all, like my I mean our GT3s are not good GT cars.
No.
Don't be fooled by the GT in front of the 3. Yeah.
Well, exactly, but this is what I was going to say, is that GT starts being used in different ways.
It
sort of almost becomes this generic motoring term that sounds cool, is GT. GT Racer and GT4 and the PlayStation, all of this GT isn't quite what we mean. Gran Turismo, which means a long trip, a big trip, is not strictly what we're talking about. It even used, I mean, I think there was like a Golf 1 GT, it became a model line. It became, you know, just a two letters put together.
I think it sounded sporty.
It sounds sporty.
It's like GT stripes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like not every GT car came with
stripes.
In fact, they wouldn't, because they're more subtle than that.
Exactly. What else have you got there, Tom?
Okay, so we've got time for one more.
Ooh.
Which is one I really like.
Okay.
Cool.
Shooting Brake.
Yes.
Now, the Shooting Brake is also horse carriage. It's basically what the hunters would take the
so I think equipment. I think it's the design of car, the shape of car, that divides people the most, because I think you either love shooting brakes or hate them.
So it's essentially it's a wagon.
Yes.
But it's got to be applied to a sporty wagon.
A sporty wagon, and sometimes a two door wagon. Have they been two?
Yeah, they have been.
Like a Volvo, the Volvo P1800 shooting brake.
Yeah, exactly like that.
Was that defined as a shooting brake?
No, it wasn't, but it kind of...
That's kind of what you...
Yeah,
our favorite one is an Aston Martin Zagato shooting brake.
Oh, God.
Look, Google it.
It makes me feel weak at the...
We actually saw one at the factory. Just being, like, moved around the back.
So it's kind of like a wagon, but... Yeah, it's got a
stretched
the,
out.
It's
longer. It's almost coupe like. It kind of
blends. It's got a wagon.
It's got a lower roof line.
Yeah,
it's a wagon with a lower roof line. Yeah,
there was a great one. The CLS, the Mercedes CLS
shooting brake.
Actually, we were talking about
that. Was lovely, and it had a wooden floor in the back.
That's right.
Like a ship, a luxury yacht.
It was a wonderful
thing. That was a great car.
I remember we were talking on test. And
what is this?
Yeah.
What is that?
There'd be many.
It's a Corvette shooting brake.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's cool.
Is that a thing?
Yeah. It is a thing.
Oh.
We were talking about this on Cars and Coffee today, actually.
Oh.
Because this is what Mike likes as a shooting brake.
Mike would dig that. It's easy to do.
Corvette Bucky.
Corvette Bucky.
Well, that's a great thing. You can take an old canopy that you found on the side of the road, and then you can just, like, get a blowtorch out and weld them together. Yeah, this that's cool. See, I like it. Now, while you've got your internet out, Google Toyota 86 shooting brake.
No, I won't.
Oh, really?
I wouldn't waste my data.
No, seriously. Toyota actually...
I'd be wasting data.
You wouldn't.
The ultimate shooting brake, though.
Mm.
Are you sitting down? What? We saw this.
Yeah.
Ferrari 250 bread van.
Oh, yeah. The bread van.
Yes,
cool.
We did see that. That is a cool shooting
Google
brake.
Google that. That is amazing.
So now, is the FF a shooting brake?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It might be. Yeah. So it's kind of like a coupe wagon.
It's a sporty wagon.
It's a fast roofline, basically. Yeah. That's the idea.
I don't like the FF.
Very cool. I like that.
I know you do. But it's got a funny four-wheel drive system.
I like the Toyota 86 shooting brake. If they made that car, but that
we don't doubt that you like
the Toyota. I could put my mountain bike in the back.
Oh, God.
And drums and stuff, and still have the 86 driving experience.
Well, what about my colleague who's been waiting for now almost 2 weeks for his clutch for his 86? I thought that Toyotas were... Indestructible, reliable.
Yeah,
had a dealer in every time.
You know what I've heard, though, because of my friend who had the Fortuna that kept breaking?
Yes.
Is their cars are so good that they don't carry any parts.
Is that the problem?
Yeah, that's a problem.
Okay. Well, maybe...
I think it's lame.
Maybe you could try a Subaru dealership. Maybe they would have the clutch.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Phone up Subaru and say, listen, BRC clutch.
Top it's a Toyota, isn't it? Can't we just phone BMW?
So I think I like this kind of motoring definitions segment.
Maybe
you can send us some more ideas to discuss.
Yeah. If you are confused by car lingo and things car related,
ask us.
Ask the experts.
We can discuss 4x4s and all wheel drive in the next one.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Our next one will also be, we're going to talk about fuel injection.
You like that.
I do.
I'm worried that's going to be
from
boring.
Carbs until.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll talk about different ways of cars being fueled.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had an Alfa GT V6 3-liter. It was fueled with buckets of fuel.
Yeah, exactly. You could go from here to your house and work and back again on one tank of gas.
Amazing.
Exactly.
Incredible stuff.
All right.
Well, guys, that's all the time we have.
Cool.
We've used it all up, unfortunately. But we'll be back next week for another episode of Cargumentus. So from me, Thomas Faulkner, and my good motoring mates.
Thanks for tuning
Boots.
In.
But
Of Foot Fighters.
Foot Fighters.
Mark Luton, Nadab Ravi. We'll catch you again next week on Cogumentative.
Ciao.
Bye, bro.